Атаа хатлачаас хатцаачил атлма цагэц нүбчилэлүг кавашимл.
Good morning, everyone. This is the recorded lecture for our summer course. We just covered some possible responses to yu kwa hak chachimhe, and the responses we covered were ha'a, chachimhe mah yu kwa mah chachimhe, cha chimhaisa cha chimhaisa, which is a fragment. We can make it a complete sentence by saying cha chimhaisa mah cha chimhaisa, but I rarely hear that. Usually I hear it as a fragment. Here are some more sentences for today. Katsachil atlma tlah uyi. Tsakets ish nupchisal atlukma kawashimil. Nas atlukma ko assa. Uisitah chapi athe uyi. Iuquameta cephala. Akakha ahku. We're now looking at the first words resource, and I'm going to explain what each of these function word categories is, what these words do, how they're used. The first function word category that we're going to talk about is interjections, which I've already mentioned today. Interjections are single words that can stand alone as a complete utterance. So yes and no are interjections. Chu is possibly the most important interjection in new channels. Chu is used for goodbye, or we're done, or let's move on, or I got it. The basic meaning of chu, it means it's used for all those things. Its basic meaning is we're done with this thing, let's move on to the next thing. The next function word category that we're going to talk about is glue words. This is really a grab bag. It's several function word categories that don't fit conveniently into other categories. Linguists would call these complementizers, conjunctions, and adpositions. And they're words like and, for, at. Next are pronouns. Pronouns are words that are used to refer to people without using their names. So when I'm talking to Mariah, I can get her attention by saying her name, Mariah, or I can just say you, because I'm talking to her. And you is a pronoun. Nuchanov has only four pronouns: I, you, you all, and we. There are no pronouns for third persons, so there's no such thing as a he, she, or it, or they pronoun in Nuchanov. There is an ending that kind of means they, but we'll get into that later. However, these four pronouns have several different forms. So, for example, when I talk about myself, I'll use siya. That's the short pronoun. But sometimes I'll use the slightly longer form, si'yak. I would use that if I were saying, it's me. There's also a possessive pronoun that you'll find in the next chunk of first words. So we don't learn it right away, but you will learn it soon. The possessive pronoun for I is si'yas. That means it is mine. And there's also an object pronoun, which is si'chich. That means to me. So only four pronouns, but each pronoun has four different forms. And Nuchanov makes a strict distinction between you singular and you plural, which English does not make. So this is one of the many things you have to learn to keep track of if you're moving from English to Nuchanov. It becomes important to make it clear whether you mean you one person or you more than one person. The next function word category is pointers. These are also called deictics or demonstratives. They're words like this and that. They behave a lot like pronouns, so they're ways of referring to something without naming it. But they also include distance. Pronouns don't include distance, right? When I say I and you, there's no indication there of how far away we are from each other. Whereas when I point to things with this and that, I'm implying something about how far away they are. Something that I call this is closer. Something that I call that is further away. And we're going to be covering the basics of the Nuchanov pointer system today, because we're going to be talking about things in our classroom. What is this? What is that? So we're going to have to use pointer words to point to the things that we're talking about. The fifth category of function words in first words is indefinites. And indefinites is probably the most difficult of the function word categories to learn how to use. Indefinites are words that have some missing information. So they include words like who and what. One use of indefinites is to ask questions, right? When I ask who is that, who marks a bit of missing information that I want you to fill in. But indefinites are not only used to ask questions. They're used to mark missing information in other places, like point me to the man who does this job. There, I'm using the same word who that I was using before, but here I'm not asking for information. It's just performing a grammatical function of describing someone without naming them. Those are the five function word categories that are covered in first words. I'm not going to talk about the content word categories. Most of you, I think most of them will probably be familiar with to you already, like nouns, verbs, and adjectives. And we'll cover them in detail sometime later. So for now, I would really like it if this week you familiarize yourself with this document. It's not very long, but it has tons of information. You need to learn as quickly as possible how to use this to find information that you need and to start building your vocabularies. Each of you is going to need to start building your vocabulary and checking yourself, checking your vocabulary as we go along. And different people use different strategies. So some people like to use flashcards. Some people like to write lists. Some people like to just practice orally. There are several ways to build and practice your vocabulary. So each of you needs to learn the best method that works for you and then use that method throughout our course. While we're here, let's learn something about the Nuchanov pointer system. Under pointers on the first page of first words, you'll find six words. Two of them you don't need to worry about because they're in another dialect. The words that have a C after them are central dialect words, and you can ignore those for now. They're on the list though because eventually, if you continue studying Nuchanov, you're going to be in the presence of central dialect speakers. And I want to help you understand those people when you hear them. Central Nuchanov is not very different from Barkly Sound Nuchanov, but there are vocabulary and grammatical differences. And the different words tend to be the common words, and that includes pointers. So when you get to the point of trying to understand central speakers, it'll be important for you to recognize central words that are different from Barkley sound words, but for now we'll ignore them. So we're just going to look at the first four words here, which are ahku, ahni, yas, yes. There are a couple of challenging things about using Nuchanov pointers. The most challenging thing, in my experience, is that Nuchanov distinguishes 4 degrees of distance in its pointers, whereas English only just distinguishes two. So in English, there's a distinction between this and that, between here and there. That's a two-way distinction in distance. But Nuchanov has a four-way distinction in distance. Ahku points to something that's closer to me than the person I'm talking to. Ahni points to something that is closer to the person I'm talking to than it is to me. Yas points to something that's far from both of us. Yes points to something that's very far from both of us. Did I mix my words up just now when I was explaining that? I often think one thing and say another. So I had a fa good. Okay, I had a feeling that I switched ahku and ahni, but just to be clear, ahku means close to me, ahni means close to you. So, for example, if I'm asking about what is this, I'll say akakha ahku. But if I'm pointing to something by you, I'll ask akakha ahni. What is that by you? And if I'm pointing to something far from both of us, akakha yas. Akakha yas. The second thing that you have to keep track of is that some of these pointers have short forms. Ahku, this, can be shortened to ah. Yas and yes can be shortened to ya and ye. And they're usually shortened when possible. But there are also cases when they cannot be shortened. Just to put it briefly, the time when you have to use the full form of the pointer is when it's the predicate of the sentence. But if it's not the predicate of the sentence, then you can shorten. So I'm going to start by talking about what I call the throat sounds, which are plain H, back H, glottal stop, and pharyngeal stop. And then I'll add in the back sounds, which are Q and back X, as well as their round versions, round Q and round it back X. If any of you has the alphabet summary handout handy, I'd like you to help me by going through the example words for those sounds. So we just reviewed the alphabet example words for the throat sounds and the back sounds, and those words are husman, hayu, ama, anus, kawi, kuni, khashkuk, mukhoshkin. The words for the back X's are a little more complex and unusual than the other words, mainly because there aren't very many words in Nuchanals with X sounds. So it's harder to find good, simple words that are suitable for teaching people the alphabet. But these are very interesting words. Chachashkuk is what's usually called a pilot biscuit today, but that's also what's called hardtack. It's a biscuit that people can eat and live on that also survives at sea. It's very dry. It doesn't rot very quickly. It keeps for a long time. Most people don't enjoy them, but a lot of people on the west coast of Vancouver Island grew up with them because fishing is a very important industry on the west coast. So for a lot of people around here, they're actually comfort food. And the Tsashat market is one of the few places in British Columbia where you can still buy hardtack in a regular grocery store. Mukhoshkin is defined here as soapberry. This is interesting as well. The soapberry is not native to Vancouver Island. It grows on inland BC. But to a lot of people, a lot of indigenous people, it's a treat because it you can beat it and it foams up. So the beaten soapberries have a texture similar to ice cream. And to a lot of tribes, it's considered a treat. However, soapberries are also very bitter. So to people who are not used to it, it's not delicious at all. It's an interesting example of the kind of thing that is a treat only if you grow up with it. The root of mukhoshkin is the root for boiling. So mukhwa means boiling, like boiling water. And the soapberry has built on that same root because of the way it foams up. The root of chachashkuk is hush, which means a vertebra or a sand dollar. So there the biscuit is being compared to a sand dollar because it does look a lot like a sand dollar. It's flat, dry, with little holes in it. We're now looking at the chart, the sound chart on the alphabet handout. And you'll see that the sounds that we're studying today, the throat sounds and the tongue back sounds, they're all in the right side of the chart, right? They're in the four rightmost columns. That's because this chart is an idealized representation of the human vocal tract. It starts at the left with the lips and then goes down so that the right side of the chart represents the bottom of the throat. To illustrate this, it's going to help to look at the picture of the vocal tract that you can find on the online alphabet tutorial. We're now looking at that diagram. So this is the mid-sagittal view, which linguists always use pointing to the left, so that the lips are on the left and the throat is on the right. This chart shows several consonants according to where in the vocal tract they're made. And the ones we're focusing on today are the ones on the right. So the Q and the back X are made at the top of the throat where the uvula is. The uvula is that dangly piece of skin. So they sound like ka, ha, ka, ha. And their rounded versions are qua. Hua, hua, hua. If you go further down, we get to the pharynx. The pharynx is the bottom of the throat where we still have tongue. That's where the tongue root is located. So the tongue is a large organ, bigger than most people know, goes all the way down here. And we can still move the tongue down here. When we make pharyngeal sounds, which include the pharyngeal stop and the back H, by flexing the root of the tongue in order to narrow the throat. So the pharyngeal stop, ah, and the back H, or pharyngeal H, ha, are both made with narrowed pharynx. And we narrow the pharynx by bunching up the tongue down here. If we go even further down, we come to the last place in the vocal tract where Neuchanoff makes sounds. That's at the glottis. The glottis is the space between the vocal cords. The vocal cords are in the larynx or voice box. I think it can help to understand this to talk about what the function of our larynx was before we started speaking, before human beings developed speech, which probably happened between 100,000 and 200,000 years ago. All mammals have a larynx, but we're the only species that has language. So obviously it's useful for more than language. Basically, the function of the larynx is to prevent food and drink from going into the lungs, because our mouth leads to two places. It leads to the lungs that we use to breathe, and it leads to the stomach that we use to process food. And we want air to go down to the lungs, and we want food and drink to go to the stomach, and we don't want them to cross paths. So we were able to open and close those passages, and the larynx is the thing that closes off the lungs to make sure that water and food don't go down into it. It's a boxy organ that gives men their Adam's apple. Everyone has an Adam's apple. It's just more prominent in men because it's bigger. And that box holds two flaps of skin that we call the vocal cords. Those flaps of skin close to protect the lungs. What's cool about human beings, and actually a lot of other species, many species can also use their vocal cords to make voice. Because if you hold the vocal cords loosely, kind of tense but loose, they vibrate when we exhale. And that's where our voice comes from. It comes from the vibration of our vocal cords. The original purpose of the vocal cords was just to keep food and drink from going into our lungs. But many animals use them to make voice, and human beings use voice to make language. Now, so the box is called the larynx. The flaps of skin are called the vocal cords. And the space between the vocal cords is called the glottis. It's kind of interesting that a space has a name, right? It's actually a nothing. It's an absence of something. The glottis is the empty space between the vocal cords. So we call glottal stop and H glottal sounds because they involve doing something at the glottis. The sound of a glottal stop is simply the sound of closing and then opening the vocal cords. And it sounds like this. And we use this sound in English. Anyone who has a name that is written with a vowel at the beginning, like Adam or Eric, their name is going to be pronounced with a glottal stop at the beginning. So Adam actually starts with a glottal stop. And in Hebrew, which is the language that the name Adam comes from, it is actually written with a glottal stop. The Hebrew letter Aleph represents the glottal stop at the beginning of Adam. And if we wrote Eric in Hebrew, I don't know if it would be written with an aleph. That's an interesting question. But phonetically speaking, both Adam and Eric start with a glottal stop. However, we never write this in English because it's predictable. The presence of glottal stop is predictable in English. Basically, we use it at the beginning of a syllable that doesn't have another consonant available. That's the function that glottal stop serves in English. However, in Neuchanoff, glottal stop is used for as a meaningful sound. And we actually can find minimal pairs of words where one word has glottal stop, the other word does not, and they mean different things, which shows that the glottal stop is meaningful. Therefore, we need to keep track of where the glottal stop is in Neuchanoff, and we need to write it. So you will not have any trouble pronouncing glottal stop because you all already know how to pronounce it, but you might have trouble remembering to write it and to pronounce it when you read it. H is also a glottal sound, the plain H. I'm talking about the plain H now. The plain H is what you get when you bring the vocal cords kind of close together, but still leave an opening, and you hold them stiff so that they can't vibrate. It sounds like this. Plain H is a very quiet sound. It's the sound of whispering, right? Whispering is the absence of voice. And so H and glottal stop, both H and glottal stop are in a sense negative sounds because H represents an absence of voice. Glottal stop represents an absence of airflow. Nevertheless, despite being negative sounds in a way, despite being the absence of something, they're used as meaningful language sounds in many languages. Both English and Nushanoth use H as a meaningful sound. Nushanoth also uses glottal stop as a meaningful sound. Glottal stop is heard in English, but it is not meaningful because it is predictable. So I've just explained the three places of articulation that we're talking about. The place where Q is pronounced, which we call the uvula. So these are uvular sounds. The place where pharyngeal stop is pronounced, which is called the pharynx. So these are pharyngeal sounds. And the place where glottal stop and H are pronounced, which we call the glottis, which makes them glottal sounds. So that's where these words come from. Uvular from uvula, pharyngeal from pharynx, and glottal from glottis. Having an understanding of articulatory phonetics, that's what we've just been talking about, can help you learn to pronounce these sounds properly, and can also help you learn why they behave the way they do. So after our break, I'll be talking about how back sounds deform vowels. And if you understand the articulatory phonetics of those sounds, it makes perfect sense why that should happen. And this will help you, knowing this will help you pronounce Nushanoth better. As I said before, you will not have any trouble pronouncing glottal stop and H because you already know these sounds from English. The word for kelp is husman, husman. Specifically, this is bull kelp. There are other names for other kinds of kelp. And ama, ama is a loon. It's kind of unfortunate that this name sounds silly in English, because the loon is a very beautiful bird. But now let's talk about the back H in hayu and the pharyngeal stop in anus. So as I said earlier, pharyngeal sounds are made by flexing the root of the tongue in order to narrow the pharynx. And this causes sounds. The back H is what you get when you narrow the pharynx and blow air through it. And it sounds like this. It's much louder and stronger than a plain H. Plain H is nearly silent by itself. We can hear plain H mainly by the fact that it lacks voice. So we hear the H in comparison to the sounds next to it, because the voice disappears very briefly. That's how we know that there's a plain H there. Whereas we know that there's a back H there because it's noisy. We can actually hear the back H. It has a loud, raspy sound. It's an unusual sound in human languages. There aren't very many languages that use this as a language sound. Nushanoth and Arabic are two of the languages that do. This is the sound, by the way, at the beginning of the Arabic word hummus, which many of you eat. So pronouncing the back H takes effort. And even after you learn how to say it, you might find that you need to force yourself to put forth the effort to pronounce it. I think I shared my experience that I have this feeling, I've always had this feeling, that I shouldn't have to work this hard to make a language sound. But that's just my English accent coming out. It takes effort to pronounce back H. Back H is also a very common sound in Nushanoth. It's everywhere. So if you don't pronounce the back H right, you will not sound good in Nushanoth, and you might even be misunderstood. For example, the difference between I'm okay and he's okay is only a back H. Chachem hema means I'm okay. Chachem hema means he's okay. And your listener, the person you're talking to, needs to be able to hear your back H to tell the difference between those two words and many other similar words. English speakers aren't used to controlling their tongue root, not consciously anyway, but here are a couple of tricks you can use to control your tongue root. First, when we say ah, ah, we often flex our tongue root. Ah, ah, you might be able to feel your tongue root flexing, and that can help you find it. Also, the English R sound, which is another very unusual language sound, by the way. Very few languages in the world have the sound R, but English is one of them. The English R is a complex sound that involves rounding the lips, bunching the tongue inside the mouth, and bunching up the tongue root. So if you say you should also feel your tongue root flexing. So these two tricks, saying ah or saying can help you find the tongue root. Once you find your tongue root, then try flexing it and blowing air through it to make the back H. That's a back H. Let's talk about the pharyngeal stop now. The pharyngeal stop, we write it with a symbol similar to the symbol we use for glottal stop, and it also sounds similar to the glottal stop. What they have in common is they both involve stopping the flow of air very briefly, and they're both made deep in the throat. The difference is that the glottal stop is made by bringing the vocal cords together, whereas the pharyngeal stop is made by flexing the tongue root against the back of the throat. And they do have very distinctive sounds. The sound of the pharyngeal stop, I often describe as a strangling sound. It sounds like ah. The reason why it sounds like strangling is because it has a very similar effect to strangling. When one person strangles another, they compress the throat, narrowing the passage, right? And that's more or less what you're doing when you make a pharyngeal stop. You're flexing the tongue root to narrow the throat. And it sounds like ah. So it's a very similar sound to the sounds people make when they're choking or being strangled. Not necessarily choking, because choking can involve a blockage further down. Let's compare the words ama and anus. Ama, anus. Ama, anus. Ama has a glottal stop. Anus has a pharyngeal stop. The difference between the two sounds, there are several differences. One is that the glottal stop is a much quieter, cleaner sound. Ama, ama. It's almost not there. To English ear, it isn't there. Whereas anus has more of a sound, right? There's that strangling sound of the air going through the pharynx. Anus. Also, the pharyngeal stop has an effect on vowels because vowels are distinguished by tongue position, and the pharyngeal stop involves the tongue, right? It involves bunching up the bottom of the tongue. And when we bunch up the bottom of the tongue, there's less tongue in the mouth to make vowels. And as a result, the pharyngeal stop and the back H both have an effect on the vowels that they're next to. You can hear their pharyngeality on their on adjacent vowels, whereas the glottal stop and the plain H have zero effect on adjacent vowels. That is, they have zero effect on the vowel quality because the glottal stop and the plain H are made strictly at the glottis. They do not involve the tongue. So the tongue is free to do whatever it needs to do to make vowels, whereas the pharyngeal sounds do involve the tongue, therefore do affect vowels. And that is going to be the main way that you can hear the difference between glottal sounds on the one hand and pharyngeal sounds on the other. Next, I've prepared some examples with back sounds and with non-back sounds to help illustrate the effect of back sounds on vowels. Why don't we start by looking at the chart? Okay, we're looking at the consonant chart, and let's focus our attention on the four rightmost rows. So the rows with Q, round Q, pharyngeal stop, and glottal stop. The last row represents the glottis, the row to the left of it, the pharynx, and the two rows to the left of that represent the uvula, the area around the uvula. And in front of the uvular sounds are the velar sounds, that is the K's and the X's. So the sounds that I'm calling the back sounds are the ones in the last three rows but one. That is Q, round Q, and pharyngeal stop. Those three columns. Did I say row? I meant column. Those three columns are what I call the back sounds. And they form a class because these are the sounds that deform vowels. K does not deform vowels. Glottal stop does not deform vowels. But the three rows, three columns between them do deform vowels. The reason they deform vowels is because Q and pharyngeal sounds involve the back of the tongue. So they pull the tongue back. Whereas vowels are made with the front of the tongue. And when the tongue gets pulled back, it affects how vowels sound. K's are made far enough forward that they don't affect vowels, whereas glottal sounds don't use the tongue at all, which is why they don't affect vowels. First, we'll look at plain H and glottal stop. These are all words with plain H and glottal stop, and the vowels will sound the way they're supposed to. These are pure vowels, undeformed. Let's say these words together. Hamut. Hiz hisa. Husmin. Hopi. Ama. Isak. Om'i. And the meanings of these words are bone, beating with an axe or club, bull kelp, helping, loon, respecting, and mom. Next, we're going to look at some words with pharyngeal sounds. So we first are some words with the pharyngeal stop, and second are some words with the back H, the pharyngeal H. And I've chosen words that have the pharyngeal H in different parts of the word. So not just the beginning, but also the middle and end. So you can hear what that sounds like. And you'll also notice as we go through this that they have more effect on high vowels than on low vowels. A is a low vowel. It is made down in the throat. So it is less affected by back sounds because both the A and back sounds use the same region of the tongue. So they don't interfere with each other. Whereas high vowels, I and U are high vowels because they involve the tongue being close to the roof of the mouth. E, U. Those are the ones that are most strongly affected by pharyngeal sounds. Let's pronounce these. Anus. Ait, aita. Ausabat. Ah, ah. Eh. Unako. These words mean heron, telling lies, Salish person, that just mentioned, big, and looking at it. Next are some other words with back H, some of which we've heard already. Hayu, hesa, hamis. And I put these together mainly to help you compare the effect of back H on A versus I and U. It has less of an effect on A, more of an effect on I and U. Hayu, hesa, hamis. Next, here are some words with Q. And here again, I've put the Q next to some different vowels. And you might be able to hear that the Q has less of an effect on the A, but more of an effect on I and U. These words are kasi, kawi, kei, kaoas. Kasi, kawi, kei, kaoas. With long vowels, like the vowels in kei and kaoas, you'll even hear a phonetic diphthong, where the part of the vowel that's next to the Q is deformed, but the part of the vowel that's far from the Q is not deformed. So in the word K, for example, which means a long time, K, by the end of the vowel, we're where we want to be, at E. But at the beginning of the vowel, we're more like at E. K, K. Can you hear how the vowel changes throughout the word? That's the effect of the Q pulling down the front of the vowel, but not the end of the vowel. Last, I've prepared a couple of what linguists call minimal pairs. A minimal pair is a pair of words that are very similar except for one sound. And so they allow you to compare the effects or the different sounds that are different. So first, we have tzik tzika and tzek tzeka. These words mean rocking and speaking. And you should be able to hear that the K's in tzik tzika have no effect on the vowel, whereas the Q's in tzek tzeka do have an effect on the vowel. Tzik tzika, tzek tzeka. Tzik tzika, tzek tzeka. Our last minimal pair is hims and chetzkui. Hims, chetzkui. Hims is something people say when they finish telling a story. Hims, 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 hims. Means like,
and they live happily ever after. The end. Hatsutsukui is crumbs. Hits, Hatsutsukui. Hims, Hatsutsukui.
So you should be able to hear that the back X pulls the I down, the front X does not.
Yeah, we just had a good question about the double C in Hatsutsukui, which is means crumbs. The question is that pronounced as one long C or as two separate Cs? And the answer is it's pronounced as two separate Cs. And this is a difference between consonants and vowels in Nichon. When we write two vowel letters, it's just one long vowel. When we write two consonant letters, it really is two consonants. And this is not at all unusual in Nichon. There are lots of words with two identical consonants one after the other, and they're both clearly pronounced. The word for three, for example, is katsutsa, and has a double C, katsutsa. The other night, I made up a new word for bowl cut. The word I made up is hokke. Hokke. It's not a well-established word yet, but it makes sense. And it means a bowl turned over on top of someone's head. Hokke. And that's a double Q.
Next, we'll be returning to the survival conversations and working on mastering more of these. I hope that all of you will have a pretty solid grounding in all of the survival conversations by the end of next week. Those of you who've been doing this for years should have them memorized back to front. Those of you who are learning them for the first time should at least be able to recall each of these when you need them. Yesterday, we were working on conversations 6 through 10, which are the greetings conversation. Today, we're going to move on to 11 through 15, which are the classroom conversations. Let's start by just pronouncing them. We'll go through them. I'll say them out loud, and I'd like you to say them out loud, too. And feel free to unmute yourselves, because I like to hear how you guys sound. Don't worry, your voices won't show up on the recorded lecture. Let's start with 11A, akakhaku. Those of you with English accents will have trouble pronouncing the back H in ahku. Akakhaku. Haya akah kwekusi. Haya akah kwekusi. Wei. Chu wa akta. Chamuthas utsachit chishul. In my experience, the word that the people have the most trouble with in the sentence is utsachit. Utsachit means to go to. Let's break it into syllables. U tsa chit. Utsachit. Chamuthas utsachit chishul. Chamuthe its wasakchi. Hooks atu akhen. Hooks atu in. In my experience, almost no one pronounces the X right in hooks atu. Hooks atu means resting. X is a rare sound to begin with in New Channel. And in addition to that, it's in this word, it's in a three consonant cluster that's difficult to pronounce. Hooksatu. But I encourage all of you to put forth the effort to learn how to pronounce this properly. Hooksatu. Don't get lazy with the word for rest. Get it? Hasikatlen. Hasikatlen. If you compare 15A and 15B, you'll notice that the only difference between them is the presence of that back H in the third syllable. The fourth syllable. Hasik atlen. Hasik atlen. And a lot of learners don't put forth the effort to properly distinguish those two words. In order to make it clear whether you're making a question or a statement, you have to make it clear whether you're pronouncing that back H or not. The question is, hasik atlen. The statement is hasik atlen. And notice that they don't only differ in the presence or absence of the back H, they also differ in their syllabification, right? The last syllable of 15A is hen. The last syllable of 15B is klin. So if you're pronouncing your back H's properly and you're properly syllabifying your words, it will be clear which words you mean. If you're not, then it won't.
As I was listening to you all practice conversations 11 through 15, I noticed some things that were worth commenting on. Also, some of you asked specifically about these things. So here are some responses. First of all, there's a couple of dialect differences between East and West Barkley Sound that some of you will notice in these conversations. I'm teaching East Barkley Sound in this class, and that's what Mariah and Eric and Bethany and Ruben are learning. But some others of you are deliberately studying West Barkley Sound because you are you clueless people, or those are the people who you practice with. And these are some interesting and subtle differences between East and West Barkley Sound. So the word for can or able is o'omhe in most dialects, o'omhe, and that word also works in East Barkley Sound. So notice the B means this works throughout Barkley Sound. C and T mean central and northern. So o'omhe is the same word, works the same way in Barkley Sound, central, and northern dialects. But only in East Barkley Sound, there is also the word chamush, which means the same thing. So o'omhe, chamush, two different ways to say can or able. In East Barkley Sound, you can use either one. In everywhere else, you would only use o'omhe. So for example, Ruben and Trinity were practicing together. Ruben's learning East, Trinity's learning West. So Trinity's more likely to say o'omhe has tzatzit l'tishus, whereas Ruben is more likely to say chamush has tzatzit l'tishus. Another dialect difference has to do with the word for not knowing. In many dialects, all across Barkley Sound, you can say hayimhe for not knowing, hayimhe. Only in East Barkley Sound, you can also say hayaak, hayaak. So the East Barkley Sound learners have a choice. You can use either word, whereas everyone else would only use hayimhe. There are a couple of sentences in 11 through 15 that might very well get revised soon, officially revised in the public version of the survival conversations. This revision has been a long time coming. We've been talking about it for years, and you new learners are lucky enough to have arrived right at the moment when we might actually do the revision, so you're going to be confronted both with the old versions and the new versions. The first one has to do with 11b, which is Hayakah Kwekosi in the version that we've just been looking at, but that will probably be revised to Hayakah Kwekhi. Both phrases work, but Kwekhi, I've learned, is better than Kwekosi. It's a slight difference in mood. Kwekhi uses the weak mood to say what it is, and Kwekosi uses the unknown mood to say what it is. And the difference is that Kwekosi is a little less certain. So when you say Hayaka Kwekosi, you're saying, I don't know what on earth it is. But when you say Hayaka Kwekhi, it's a little more neutral. I don't know what it is. So Kwekhi is the more useful phrasing, the one that you're more likely to use. Although eventually you want to know how to use both. The other revision that's likely to happen is to 14a. It's currently Huuksatu Akhten, which is literally, will we rest? And since this version of the survival conversations, I've learned that the better way to say this in Barkley Sound is Huuksatutsuhen, which is, should we rest? Huuksatutsuhen. It's just a slightly more natural phrasing. So these are two revisions that are likely to happen soon. You should eventually know both, and you will not be penalized depending on whether you use the old one or the new one, because they're all good sentences. It's just that we're probably going to revise this resource soon to make it as good as possible. The other comment is about consonant clusters. The consonant cluster is when you get two or more consonants in a row, and these are common in Nuchonal, right? We can get clusters of up to five consonants in a row in Nuchonal. And there's a, English also has lots of consonant clusters, but there's a important difference in the phonology of English versus the phonology of Nuchonal that will affect your accent in Nuchonal. That difference is, when we have a consonant cluster in English, like in the word text, or strength, or blimp, the consonants in the cluster tend to overlap quite a bit. So part of just how English is pronounced is that we can pronounce two or three consonants in a row, but they blend into each other. You know, so in blimp, the B and the L overlap quite a bit. And I think I'd say the M and the P don't overlap really, but the B and the L do. And in text, when I say text, it has a three consonant cluster at the end, KST, which is written XT, but it's actually three consonants. And I've already started pronouncing the S before I finish pronouncing the K, text. Neutronolf is the opposite. So when you have a cluster of two or more consonants in Neutronolf, each consonant gets its due. So take, for example, the word akakha, akakha, which means, what is it? Akakha. The second syllable ends in a Q, the third syllable begins in a back H, and the Q is a full Q. Akakha. I brought this up because I heard Eric pronouncing it, and I could hear him overlapping his Q and back H, which is perfectly natural for an English speaker. But in Neutronolf, the Q is a full Q, the back H is a full back H. Akakha, akakha. So, for example, the Q will have a full release, right? The release is the part of a plosive where you stop, after you stop the flow of air, you release the air again. That's called the release phase of a plosive. And the Q will have a full release in akakha in Neutronolf. Whereas in a similar English word, it probably wouldn't. Another example of this is the future ending akt. So we're using this in like wei wa aktlah, wei wa aktlah. Strong tendency of people with an English accent is to overlap the Q and the barred lambda, but in Neutronolf they should not overlap. The Q should finish and have a full release before the lambda starts. So this ending sounds like akt, akt. Notice the Q is fully released before I start saying the lambda. Akt, wa aktlah. I will say it. Wa aktlah. People do speak quickly sometimes in Neutronolf. When people speak very quickly in Neutronolf, then yes, then consonants will overlap, things will get dropped. That's true of fast speech in any language, right? But when speaking at a careful speed, every consonant gets its due in Neutronolf. That's the comment about pronunciation. So these comments had to do with dialect differences, with revisions that are likely to happen soon, and with the pronunciation of consonant clusters. Any questions about those before I move on? At this point, I want to throw some more vocabulary at you. These are things in the classroom that we're going to talk about almost every day because we do this, what we're doing here, in a classroom, and we have classroom objects around us. And some of the most common classroom objects that we mention are pipa, kitsyak, kleheks, naksats, tsisapikyak. These mean paper, pen or pencil, box, drinking cup or bottle, and telephone. These days, most of us have a personal telephone that we take with us wherever we go. And we end up talking about them. So these are just five words. Pipa, kitsyak, kleheks, naksats, tsisapikyak. But to help you learn these words, I've given you a significantly longer list, which includes some other words that are related to the words that you're learning. In my experience, this is a very good way to both to build your vocabulary more and to help your understanding of the words you're actually trying to learn. So for example, by the end of today, I want you all to know the word kitsyak, kitsyak, which means a pen or a pencil. But this word happens to have the same root as kets ketsa, which is the verb for writing, ketsuwith, which means school, and ketsasim, which means desk. These all share the root kets. So based on all these related words, what do you suppose the root kets means? So these next two words are tsistup, tsisapekyak. First of all, what does tsistup mean? So these are three words based on the root tsis. The words are tsisa, line, tsistup, rope, and tsisapikyak, telephone. Why do you suppose telephone, what does telephone have in common with ropes and lines? What's the connection? Were you about to say something, Eric? Yeah, the cord, right. And this doesn't refer to the cord on the handset of old telephones. I think it refers to the lines, the overhead lines. And before this meant telephone, it meant telegraph, right? So the telegraph was the first invention to use overhead lines. And then Eventually, those same lines or similar lines got used for the telephone. And now, of course, our telephone, most of our telephones do not use those overhead lines, but we still call telephones esepekyak. I'm comparing three words here, naka, naksats, naputayi. The first two, naka and naksats, have the same root. Naka means drinking, is a verb. Naksats is a thing. It's a drink container. Anything that contains a drink is a naksats. So coffee mug, drinking glass, water bottle, they're all naksats. Naputayi is specifically bottle. Naputayi. And in fact, naputayi is a borrowed word. Can anyone tell what language the word naputayi is borrowed from? The word naputayi comes to Nushanal through Chinookwawa from French. So this is one of several French words of French origin that are still used in Nushanal today that have a very interesting history. They go back to the French fur traders who came as far west as Fort Astoria, which is now Astoria, Oregon. That's where the Chinookwawa trade language began to expand, and it expanded as far north as Alaska. And it was widely spoken in British Columbia and Washington State until around 1950 or the early 20th century. And this is interesting, first because it's French, and you have to, it's a mystery unless you know the history, why Nuchanoth would have borrowed French words in it. It's also interesting for its phonology, because Nuchanoth has no L, and so the L's in La Beauté get turned into an N and a Y in order to make it pronounceable in Nuchanoth. Naputayi. The last two words are tlahex and pipa. I haven't provided any related words to these. Tlahex is a native word for box, and pipa is a borrowed word meaning paper.